Well, I hope you, if that's what you're going to do, I hope you have a good flight.
Good. You have a bad one every now and then, but that wouldn't, if, without those, you wouldn't appreciate the good ones.
Watching some YouTube videos the other night on jet, remote control jet planes. And this guy hit the telephone pole trying to come in for landing. It just devastated him. My gosh, it tore that plane all to pieces.
Any time that you go through while you're learning how to fly that, or even after you've flown for years where you have accidents like that, hopefully nobody gets hurt, but it is a learning experience. My learning experience is eventually they're all going to come down, not the way that you had planned. So plan on that.
My uncle used to fly. He was an amateur radio guy too. His call sign was N4OB, and he flew propeller driven. You know, had his little toolbox with a starter motor on it, and they'd have contests out at out here at the house when we had cotton fields out here. And they'd spend the whole weekend out there just flying. I used to love to go out there and watch them. And it's, you know, had pretty bad accidents from time to time. And they'd just laugh about it, and he'd go get another plane and start again.
Me back in the 70s and 80s, I used to compete a lot in the Southeast. And you got to know everybody that you were competing against. And they were from all over, you know, from Louisiana to Virginia, down to the tip of Florida, and everything in between all of that, all the way over to, that included Nashville and Kentucky, and Tennessee and Kentucky. And you got to be such good friends with them. When you're competing, like we were competing, it's mostly aerobatic, as under the clock. How fast can you do what on the clock? So, as you can imagine, there were a lot of broken airplanes. But everybody enjoyed it so much that if one of your competitors broke their airplane, if they come in and hit too hard, you know, because they were trying too hard, and ripped their landing gear off or poked a hole in their wing with their landing gear when it came off, you'd be over there with them helping them get it going again so they could continue to compete. That's how fun it was. It was like, it's like a ham radio family. That was like an RC airplane family. So, yeah, that's going to happen. You don't want to see anybody auger in because, you know, once they auger in, it's all over with. But if all they do is, you know, cut a hole in the wing or break the fuselage in half or pop the rudder off, you're over there helping them out, getting them to go as quick as you can. They don't do that kind of competition anymore.
I don't know. You may have met him. His name was Jim Jackson. He was a computer programmer for IBM, I think. He did was a CW, you know, monster. And he had a ham radio station near his house, had a tower. And he was into the airplanes. You know, his son decided one year he's gonna try to do helicopters, so that flight lasted maybe 8 seconds, 5 seconds, maybe. I just tore it all to pieces. And Jim looked at his son, Lewis, and said, "Well, you're done. Next one you buy."
Jackson, that lived up and around where you live, somewhere up in that area. I've been over to his house, but I couldn't go back now. He was redheaded. His name was Ken. He was good. He had quite a bit of property over there. And he could just walk out of his shop, which was next to his house, throw his airplane on the ground, take off right there at home. So he got really good being able to fly, you know, like that, make an adjustment, fly, because a lot of it was the airplane. And his name was Ken Jackson, I think. It might have been his cousin or his brother or uncle or father or something, I don't know. But anyway, he was one of the ones that went all over the Southeast competing.
Roger, that was his brother, Ken. I had another brother, Johnny, and then Uncle Jim. He was the one that he kind of Al, he's kind of like grandfather to me. I mean, he didn't raise me. He looked out for me. Took me flying and fishing and things like that, you know. We got some really good memories with him. But one time on a string, maybe I had two strings, I can't remember. But I had the best time with that thing. He used to go round and round and round and round with it. And he'd sit out there and just holler at me, make it go up, make it go down, you doing good. So I'd run out of gas, you know. But it was enjoyable to spend time with him, and even though I was just going round and round.
You control, and I might not be very good into the repeater. I'm near one of those high voltage PLCs or whatever it is. Anyway, it's making so I have to move my, at a red light, I have to move my car about a foot to hear you, and then it quits, and I move another foot, and I can hear you. But it's on my end, not yours. I'm going through that red light now, so it should get better. But if you ever saw Ken fly, he most everything he flew was fun fly competition. And he could be sitting still in front of you, and a lot of the good pilots, all of them could do this. They'd be sitting on the ground, the airplane's not moving. He'd throw full throttle and do a loop, and it'd land right back where it was when it took off, right there in front of him, and never go above his head, the top of the wing. Now, this is like a 4-foot wingspan with about a 16-inch cord, and the plane was probably about 4 feet long. Take off, do a loop, and land right there in front of you, and never go above your head.
My goodness, I've seen them out there doing some pretty amazing things with them. But Uncle Jim liked to, they liked the bourbon. So they get out there, have a little bourbon, and try to fly airplanes. And everything went good till after a while, and then you started tearing stuff up. They just laughed. They thought it was funny. But I don't know. He's I've got one of his QSL cards. When I got my license, I talked with one of his only living son, and all the radio gear's gone, you know. Nobody really knows what happened to it, but I did get a QSL card from Uncle Jim, so that was kind of nice. And my plan was to try to get his call sign. But you know, those four calls are hard to get, and the guy up in North Carolina got it. So I had to let it go.
But Ken, in probably 20 years, is he still alive?
Actually, I don't know. When Uncle Jim passed away, we just kind of lost touch. We're actually related to him. But I don't know. Dad would know. I'll ask him.
Interesting. I never hear from him anymore, never see him at any of the airfields, but I don't really go out the airfield as much as I used to. I'm starting to go back now that I'm retired. I can do that again, but wasn't doing it near as much as I was back in the 70s and 80s.
Well, his grandson, he started trying to teach little Lewis, and he just, he was more into dirt bikes than he was anything else, so that didn't last long. But I do have some enjoyable memories with him. He was big into shortwave listening. So him and his name Patsy, they had a little camper they pulled out to the cotton field, and I'd go out there and camp out with them, and I'd lay in bed with Aunt Patsy, and Uncle Jim would turn on, he called it the atomic clock. We'd listen to that thing tick, tick, you know, had the voice that gave the time every minute, and it just knocked me out. And that's what they were doing, you know. I'd get squirming around, moving around, and then they'd turn that clock on to put me to sleep. That's what they were doing. I have some fond memories of him and her both.
Back to competition days, Jerry Smith, the guy that was from Kentucky, he was a big-time competitor too. And Jerry and Ken, they compared notes a lot. both of them really improved when they started. Both of them improved a lot when they started comparing notes. And neither one of those minded hitting the juice. Well, the rest of us didn't really, we didn't care. I mean, we could take it or leave it, but nobody did it while they were flying, especially if you were competing. In fact, there was rules for disqualification if they suspected that you were doing both. But when they would be competing together, like Jerry would come down from Kentucky and go over to Ken's house and spend a week over there, and they start tuning their rigs up and building. No, that didn't work. Throw that out. Put something different on there. Try that. Okay, yeah, that works better. What's next? I'd go up there with them every once in a while. And like you said, sometimes they like to take a snort while they were working. And I think they tore up a lot of airplanes that way. But they also got really good. That just wasn't ever a thing with me. W4DJW.
Jim had old stepside Ford F-150s, a beige color thing. And him and Ken were pretty competitive. And they got out on the field and got a little sauce, you know, a little sauced up. Jim's over there talking trash to him while he's flying the airplane. And they get mad. Boy, get mad at one another. So Ken, he just turned the whole airplane around, just flew it in the back of his truck. I mean, it just messed the tailgate up. And they just laugh about it. Like, I mean, my gosh. me and Dad was up there bird hunting that day. And, it's time for us to go. Somebody's fixing to get in a fight. So we came on back to the house. But, that kind of stuff, you know. You do stuff like that and you can laugh about it. I guess that's all right.
Surprised me one bit about Ken, because he did have a temper. He could get, when he wasn't doing good, you know, you go help him out when he'd pop a wing or something, bust a prop or break an engine mount, you'd go help him out, and sometimes he would be kind of angry about it. For the most part, people didn't get angry. They understood, you know, the one rule with airplanes is it's not always going to come down the way you expect it to, especially when you're competing. But I can imagine, I can see Ken doing that now, right into the back of the truck, probably through the back windshield.
Yeah, well, no, he got the tailgate. He didn't mess the cab up, but he tore the tailgate up. Boy, I'm telling you, Jim just said, "Did you really? Okay, all right, I see how it is." So he fired his up. Ken went and pulled his truck in the woods because he knew he was gonna get it.
Days, weren't they? I do miss those days, but I wouldn't want to really go back to them for long. but they were fun. That was a lot of fun. I don't know how I did so much back then. I could build a new airplane in 40 hours. I timed myself from scratch, from nothing. You know, not a kit or anything. Cut it out of planks of wood and sheets of Monaco and glue. In 40 hours, I could have a new competition airplane. And you had to be able to do that because it's kind of like NASCAR. You know, there's no telling when you're going to go into the wall in NASCAR, and you got to have a backup car, several backups. So we'd always take several backups. But I don't know. Being younger, I was able to do a whole lot more than I can do now. It took me 6 weeks to build what I could build in 1 week back then.
Admit it is better. You know, some of that had to be, well, just try this and see what happens, or this, that, and the other. But I know I get a little old, you know, I'm older now, so when I do things like that, I get a whole lot more enjoyment out of it than when I was younger, because you got some experiences backing it, you know. Well, I remember when I did that, and it turned out, you know, whatever. So that kind of stuff's kind of, you know, I enjoy doing things like that. I've been working with this power supply, trying to build me a power supply. And I'm telling you, I have thoroughly enjoyed trying to, you know, learn the components and actually what's happening with them. Made a lot of mistakes, blew a lot of them up. But, you know, I'm at the point now to where I've got one that's working. And I know exactly what's going on in each one of the components. So, and I have really enjoyed that, you know. I don't know why, but I guess it's just the way my mind's driven, I guess.
So much you can do in amateur radio, it's just unreal. And I haven't built a power supply or anything like that that I just bought off the shelf. But that would be a good project. That'd be a good learning project. I built radios, but that doesn't mean I know how to design a radio. I just know how to follow instructions.
The lesson I learned this week, Dave, was, I'm sorry, it's KO4NUE with W4DJW. The schematic has got nothing to do, and I mean nothing to do, with circuit card layout. It took me about 2 days to figure that out. And what that does is that forces you to know what each component is doing. The schematic just, you know, is just that. This wire goes there, it goes to that pin. But when you're trying to lay it out on circuit board, and when you get it done, it looks nothing like the schematic. And that's when I had an aha moment and said, okay, if I'm going to lay this out this way, I'm going to, I can't draw it like the schematic on the circuit board. I got to know what each component is doing so I can move the wires around or the traces where I want them.
But the schematic is not a mechanical drawing. But it is kind of curious sometimes. I look at the, like, I got old PC motherboards and stuff like that. And before I throw them away, sometimes I just inspect them just to see what's what on them, see if there's any components in there that I might want to use later that I take off before I scrap them out. And it is amazing if you look at the traces and how they, like, some of the traces are, they're like cutting across the motherboard, and all of a sudden they'll make zigzags, and then they'll come back to the same path they were on before and continue on. It's like that trace had to have a certain length, right? And that's kind of amazing, right? Because you get capacitance, inductance, resistance, and, I mean, it's amazing that they go to that extreme, right, to add some distance to a trace on the motherboard just to change characteristics of that signal when it arrives at its destination.
So the other I learned was I ordered some copper-clad circuit boards and some ferric chloride so I could experiment, you know. So when I got the cards in, it's got copper on both sides. And I thought, well, I just paid a little extra for nothing because I don't need that copper on the backside. Well, when you start drawing the actual circuit layout out, you trap yourself really quick with some of the traces. So I'm having to duck down through the card and pick up the backside to, you know, keep from shorting something out. You think you get all those lines in there without, you know, positive, negative touching, but nah, don't work that way. You gotta use that bottom side. So I think that's kind of neat. I got traces on both sides, so I'm getting it. It's just it's slow.
Yeah, you can paint yourself in a corner really quick doing that on the circuit board. I've done the same thing. I just get into my CAD, not AutoCAD, it's called Bobcat. It's a CAD-CAM package. And so instead of using acid to remove the copper, you can just use an end mill. And you know, you're designing those paths, but you got to go mill the opposite of what your path is going to be. You don't mill the path, you mill everything out from around the path. And, yeah, that can get really confusing really fast. W4DJW.
Yeah. All right, Dave, I'm going to have to duck on out. I have destinated. So nice talking with you, bud. I'm going into town here and see what I can get. I'll talk at you later. It's KO4NUE. I'm clear.
See you later. Good talking to you. I enjoyed it. KO4NUE, W4DJW Mobile.
KO4NUE, N0TR.
KO4NUE. Hey, Tom, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Jen. I just sent you a picture. I just got back in the car. I'm just leaving the VA clinic down here. You know, the rig you need for CB up there, I've seen this guy around town before, but I don't know if you had or not. Dave, you can comment, too. He's got a big old Chevrolet, what looks like a Suburban. He got these huge antennas with helical coils on them, on the top of them. There's three of them on top of his rig. Pretty amazing to see. Dave, you're still there. Go ahead.
I'm aware you are. Where I didn't catch where you said you were, but I've seen that rig several times around town. I think that one stands out. So a lot of ham radio operators, that catches their eye.
You might not be there now, but I sent that picture up to him. A lot of people haven't seen it, I guess, but he must be a veteran. He's got a veteran tag on the back, and I saw that there. And I thought, well, I'm going to take a picture of that. It's hard to believe. I looked inside, and he had several other CB radios, and he's got a big amplifier in there of some sort, I'm sure. And I talked to him one time, but it's been a long time ago, Dave. And it's pretty amazing the way he's got all that stuff mounted. And on the front of it, there's another antenna. I don't know what it is. If I get a chance, I'll zip you a picture of it. He's got good craftsmanship. He really does. But wow, that coax running through the ceiling of that and everything is like RG8. It's just pretty amazing how he got that all in one package.
A lot of thought into it. I've never seen it still. I've seen it several times moving around. But never really knew if he was a ham or a CB or what. Never really, I never really saw it. I was in a position where I could see if his tag was a ham call on his tag. But if it's a CB, that's a lot of effort for 11 meters or one band. You know, it's going through a lot of effort. He probably would do himself good to become an amateur radio operator.
Little choppy there, Dave. Yeah, it is definitely CB, and he's probably got sideband on it. I know a lot of them in the old days. One of my friends stepped on a landmine in Vietnam and lost both eyes and everything, and he had a Browning, and then he had the lollipop mic in there, the D104, and every time he'd key that thing, go ping, because the transmitter and the receiver was separate there, but you could always tell a Browning radio, and he'd block out all 23 channels when he was talking there in town, Dave.
Talking about, I think one of my buddies back in high school had one of those, and when he'd key up, you'd hear that ring, that ringing sound, but I know what you're talking about with that. Well, Tom, I'm about to detonate, so I'm going to let you go, but enjoy the morning. It's a beautiful day out here. N0TR, W4DJW.
Okay, Dave, nice to hear you. And I think Chad might have gotten a bad spot there. I don't know if he's still there. You can come back. Oh, W4DJW, N0TR, clear.